The Blue Jays are coming in Monday night, and when you think Toronto Blue Jays, you think of those great teams they had, along with Joe Carter, of course, and John Olerud and Cito Gaston, the manager. So we had a chance to chat with Joe Carter and visit with him, and just to refresh your memory, this is a guy who played in the big league 16 years, a lot with Toronto, San Diego, Cleveland, the Cubs, and 396 home runs. He's got doubles. He's got 432 doubles, 1,445 RBIs, and he's got stolen bases, 231. I think he's a Hall of Famer, but that remains to be seen. But Joe Carter joins us, a great Toronto Blue Jay and a great Major League player. Joe, today you see guys work the count. Now they're going back to hitting the first pitch. Joe, how did you do it?
Well, you know, we didn't have all the technology they have nowadays. And, you know, Bobby always taught me one thing. He said, you know, the biggest thing is you go up there, you have to be relaxed. You know, my average was not great, but my average in with guys in scoring position, that's what propelled me. You have to know who you are as a player. You know, and I knew that as a player, I was the guy that was going to get the extra base hits, drive the runs in, you know, hit for power. Average, I was not really worried about that. So to me, I tried to make it very simple. It was always see the ball, hit the ball hard. You know, a lot of guys will go up there, they see the shifts. And, you know, I wish guys had played the big shift like that on me, because then, you know, I just bump the ball four or five times and make them kind of move back over and respect me for that nature, and then go back, you know, to hitting the ball the way I used to. But my theory was always simple, you know, especially with guys in scoring position. You know, I see guys nowadays, you know, they tighten up, they tense up because guys are in scoring position. I got to get him in. I say that's the time when you relax the most, because, you know, you've got nine guys out there beating up on one guy. So the pressure's on them to get you out. So turn that pressure around. I never really worried about who I was facing. I would go, that guy is worried about facing me, because in this situation, he'd know that I can hurt him. So I reversed the strategy and knew that he was worried about it. And I know a pitcher is not going to make that perfect pitch three times. And so I would, you know, I was more of a bad ball hitter, but I would look in certain zones.
Okay.
And whether it was a fastball, breaking ball, I felt very comfortable with hitting the pitch that was in my zone until I got two strikes. But then I wasn't too hard-headed where once I got two strikes, I would still swing for the fences. No, I would cut my swing down and hit the ball the opposite field. But I was always a good contact guy that put the ball in play, especially guys in scoring position.
Well, as I say, close to 1,500 RBIs and 396 homers in the doubles and triples. So your record speaks for itself, believe me. So I understand what you mean. Trades. Now you're just a young man, and you're a high prospect. I remember it, of the Cubs, and you get traded over to Cleveland. And Rick Sutcliffe, I think that was the deal, which Sutcliffe, of course, wins the division for the Cubs. Now you're at Cleveland. What was that like for such a young man going to Cleveland?
Are you kidding me, Marty? I mean, every guy's dream is to get to the big leagues. And I got a cup of coffee in 83. I came up the end of September. I came up for 15 days when Leon Durham got hurt with the Cubs. And so the next year, I thought I would make the team out of spring training in 84. They made a big deal with Philadelphia. They got Bob Denier, Gary Matthews, two outfielders, and that pushed me back down to AAA. So I was very upset. And I remember George Vukovic talking to me, and he goes, oh no, John Vukovic, and goes, Joe, you can do two things when you go down. You can go down there, you can sulk, you can complain, you can have a bad year, or you can go out there and you put some numbers up and make them deal with you and make a decision about you to bring you either trade you or get you to the big leagues. And so I said, okay, you know what? By I looked at the schedule, and the Cubs were going to be in the West Coast, and they were going to be in the West Coast, I believe, in June or July. And I said, I will be on that trip. And I was in my hometown, Oklahoma City. I got the news I was going to the big leagues. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, okay, who got hurt? They go, nobody got hurt. I said, what happened? He said, you got traded. I said, traded where? To Cleveland. Cleveland? I'm like, what? And I looked on the schedule. I said, where's Cleveland at? I said, they're on the West Coast. So it came to fruition that it happened. So the next day, I load up and go to Oakland to join the Cleveland Indians. And I was happy because I was in trouble. AAA, but my ultimate goal was to get in the big leagues. And I was very fortunate. I had a very good manager in Pat Corrales, who didn't go by the book. He was very non-traditional, you know, lefty against righty, righty against lefty. No, he was like, if you're ready to play, you can play against anybody. And he gave me that opportunity. And to this day, I'm very grateful for what he did, because he stuck with me and, you know, right hand against right hander, whether I would, you know, pinch inning. He didn't care if it was a left on the mound or right hander. He says, hey, you're ready to play, go up there and hit.
Yeah, well, that's the way to treat a young guy, so he gets the confidence. But you're involved in a lot of trades for big people. I said the Alomar family is part of your history here. You go from Cleveland to San Diego, and Baerga and Sandy Alomar go back to Cleveland. Now you're in San Diego, and you and Robbie go to Toronto for Fred McGriff. This is a huge trade. And Tony Fernandez, a huge trade. McGriff ends up, having a great season there and ends up with Atlanta winning a division for them. And you end up with a great career in Toronto. So I guess trades are part of the game, but would you have expected it, a man of your quality?
Well, the way I look at it is supply and demand. And you know, you can look at trades two ways. One, you can look at it as that, you know, the team that wants to get rid of you so you're not performing. I knew that was never the issue. I knew that it was the other way I looked at it, is that the other team wanted me so bad that they would do whatever it takes to get me there because of the leadership skills I had on the field, playing every day. You know, I always played every day. I played hurt. I always came to the ballpark ready to play and put numbers up. And so that's what they wanted. That was the demand that was out there. And so I never looked at it as a bad thing. I'm like, wow, all these teams want me. And so I looked at it as a positive and not a negative. But going from Chicago to Cleveland, you know, Rick Sutcliffe, you know, Cy Young won it that year. You know, then I was rumored to go to Houston for Mike Scott. So it was some big names always involved. And then with Baerga, Sandy Alomar, great Cleveland Indians players, and then the trade with Tony Fernandez and Fred McGriff, it changed everything around in Toronto. And I remember Pat Gillick tells a story that, his wife's favorite player was Fred McGriff. And after he traded after he traded McGriff and Fernandez, she called him on the phone and said, get your butt back home now before you just ruin the whole team. But unbeknownst to her, she was bringing in two quality players. And what people forget that year is we also got Devon White from the California Angels. And that solidified that whole ball club, because now you had offense, and more importantly, you had two gold glovers with Devon White in center field and Robbie Alomar at second base. Heck, I'm playing right field. You know, I bought a ticket, you know, halfway through the season and just watching those guys perform. But going to Toronto and being involved in those deals, tremendous. I mean, yeah, it was great for my career, because I knew going to Toronto, I had a chance to win a championship, and that was what it was all about.
And you had Jack Morris, which didn't hurt either.
Yeah. Miserable Jack Morris. Stu came over in 93. And, you know, Paul Molitor, Dave Winfield, Ricky Henderson was there, Tony Fernandez. I mean, you talk about an all-star game. We had an all-star game every day we played. But you know what? It was fun, Marty, because when all of your best players perform and they play and they take care of themselves, you know, Cito never had to say anything because he knew the quality of players that he had. Here's a story that a lot of people didn't really know about. In 93, we clinch in Milwaukee. Okay, so now we've got 3 games left in Milwaukee. We've got 3 games left in Baltimore to end the season. So Cito comes to the starters and go, hey, you guys aren't going to play, so why don't you guys go home? We're like, you mean go home, go back to Toronto, or go home? He says, no, you guys go home. And this was Monday night. He says, but I want you guys back in Baltimore Saturday, because you all will play Sunday. Now, you know, that late in the season, you're not going to really do that because you don't want to lose your chemistry, you know, and everything. And so Ricky, myself, Stewart, Molitor, Devon White, Alomar, I mean, we all pack up, we go home. and we come back Saturday night to play a Sunday day game in Baltimore to end the season. We faced Ben McDonald. We scored 15 runs on that Sunday after being off for like 5 days, and then went on to beat Chicago in the ALCS and then win the World Series against Philadelphia. So that's the type of players that we had, and that's the type of manager Cito Gaston was.
You know, I'm glad you're talking about this, because sometimes we lose sight of the Toronto team. You know, it's over 20 years, and you forget how good you guys were and how good Cito was, who didn't get another job, and I'm not exactly sure what happened with that. But yeah, it's good that you talk about it. All right, I want to ask, what's the ringtone on your phone? Is it the call? Oh, I mean, I've heard the call 5 million times. I said that must be his ringtone.
No, I don't have that as ringtone. You know, that's a that would be too self-absorbing. I guess that would be like the commercial with Troy Aikman. You know, you see it where his ringtone is Aikman touchdown. So I don't want to bring too much attention, but you know, that home run, you know, kind of solidified my whole career. But it was something that I'd always been preparing myself for, and it was something I never shied away from. Whenever the game was on the line, I wanted to be the guy at the plate. I didn't trust anybody else. I was more nervous in the dugout watching other guys play than I was at the plate. And I can remember being in that situation, you know, and just, you know, looking at Darren Dalton and saying, you know what, this is fun.
Yeah.
You know, this is what baseball is about. Every team, there's 28 teams at home watching you play. There's 50 million fans watching you on TV. All your grade school teachers who saw you say, oh, well, he's going to be a professional baseball player. You know, all that is going through your mind, and you're at the plate, you know, saying, wow, this is what baseball is all about, competing at this stage. And to be able to come through in that situation is the epitome of what every baseball player wants, because it's not so much for yourself, but I got more satisfaction out of watching the reaction of my teammates. CBS gave me a tape that year of every camera that was on. And so I saw it from like 12 different angles. And the best one I saw was when the ball was hit, the whole dugout erupted, jumped up, rounded the field, and what they were doing, because I couldn't see that when I was running the bases, Marty. But that is what a player dreams of, coming through in the clutch for your teammates, you know, to win a championship. And this only happened twice in the history of the game.
Right.
And the first time it happened was 1960, the year I was born.
Bill Mazeroski, who got in the Hall of Fame by virtue of hitting that home run, although he was a heck of a second baseman. Joe Carter with us, talking about an amazing career. Talking about the home run, of course, to win the World Series against the Phillies off Mitch Williams, and the call of it. You'll never hit a bigger homer than Joe, touch them all. And, you know, the call still, Tom Cheek, it gives you thrills just to hear it when MLB does it. So I say put it as a ringtone. I think it would be okay. More coming up, KNBR 680, the sports leader.